Ecclesiastes chapter 1, please. Ecclesiastes chapter 1. As Randy said, it's been a busy week, but it's been a good week. Jessica and I, of course, were in Caneyville last week. We had worked with that church on and off for about 2 years, and it was so good to be back with them and to see them have grown. Some churches we've left and gone back to, it's heartbreaking. But this was one that was thriving, it was doing well, it was doing strong. Of course, there have been heartbreaks, people who've turned their back on God, people who've passed away. But we tried to focus on the good, and it was good to be back with them. And I've not had a chance to listen to Eric's lessons yet, but I've heard nothing but edifying comments about them. And hopefully they provided you a good fire in your heart for God. And I'm certainly looking forward to listening to them. As Randy mentioned, we need to keep them in our prayers. I was texting Eric yesterday, and that church is going to go through a really rough time. Paul was a rock for them. And so certainly keep them in our prayers and keep Eric in our prayers. He's my age. He's 27 and is about to be a preacher in a congregation without elders. And he's about to be in a whole different situation. So keep him and Olivia and Julia in our prayers as well. That's certainly going to be a shift for them. One more announcement before we get started. I know it feels like we just got back, but we're going to be gone next week as well. Jessica and I, along with a lot of our young people here, will be at a camp next week. And we're looking forward to spending a week learning about Ezra and Nehemiah. And we're going to have just a wonderful time of recreation, but also good time in spiritual fellowship as well. And are certainly looking forward to that. This morning, what I would like to do is talk about the toil of life. The toil of life. I have never in my living days asked someone, so how's life going? I just have so much free time, I don't know what to do with. Normally, how's life? I am so busy, I don't even know how I'm still alive. How's life going? Well, I have been so busy with work the last few weeks, I've not had a chance to do laundry, so I'm using old jeans that I've been wearing. And then let's not even talk about the gutters that I haven't cleaned for the last couple of months. And then, oh good gracious, we've had to eat out so much over the last couple of weeks because we've just been so busy. And then family stuff, and man, life just doesn't feel like it slows down. Maybe when life slows down, then we'll get together. Life never slows down. We're always busy, we're always working, we're always going, we're always moving. My question then is this, in a busy, busy life, where do we find gain in life? We Americans are the busiest people who feel like have ever been. We pride ourselves on our busyness, on our industriousness. Well, what do we gain in our labor under the sun? What do we gain in this life? What I want to do this morning is I want to go into Ecclesiastes. We're going to focus on chapters 1 and 2 and really answer this question. And then at the end, we're going to go to a few other verses from Ecclesiastes to supplement this question, but really seek to understand, where do we find gain in life? If we are so busy and we're working, where do we find gain? In the book of Ecclesiastes, the focus of this book is asking, where does man find gain in his toil? If we'll start in chapter 1, verse 1, we're going to have selected readings from the first two chapters. Chapter 1, verse 1. The words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem, that is Solomon. Vanity of vanities, saith the preacher. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. What does man gain by all the toil at which he toils under the sun? The question I have is this, and this is the question that Solomon posed. What does man gain in his toil? What do we gain in our toil under the sun? You know, all of the hours that we put into our work, all of the heart that we put into what that we do, what gain do we find in this life? What gain? Well, in the first section of Ecclesiastes, the basic argument that Solomon is going to make is there's nothing new under the sun. Really, in chapters 1 through 2, and really the whole book, Solomon is seeking to answer this question. What does man gain in his toil at which he toils under the sun? Going down to verse 4, a generation goes and a generation comes, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises, the sun goes down, and hastens to the place where it rises. The wind blows to the south and goes around to the north. Around and around goes the wind. On its circuits, the wind returns. Verse 10. Is there a thing of which it is said, see, this is new, it has already been before in the ages before us? There is no remembrance of former things. Nor will there be remembrance of later things yet to be among those who come after them. So in seeking to answer the question, What does man gain under the sun? Solomon starts with a pretty gloomy aspect of life. Really nothing. There's nothing new under the sun. Life goes on, the wind keeps blowing, the rivers keep going, the earth keeps shifting. But really, at the end of the day, there's really nothing new under the sun. If I can paint an image for us like this, if you can imagine with me just a great field of grass. And you know, it's been overgrown with grass, not been cut all summer. And you send a little 10-year-old out with a pair of scissors and just start chomping away at the grass. Give them a year with a little pair of scissors. How much change is there really going to be? Yeah, there'll be this little section they've done, but you still look at the whole field. Yeah, it's really not changed that much. There's this one little section that's new, but yeah, really there's still grass that still needs to be mowed. It still needs to be cut. Yeah, there's really nothing new. It's not changed. And we understand this principle, right? I mean, in our day of technology, in this great digital era, we have deceived ourselves into thinking that we have made great human progress. Human nature has not changed. The world has not changed that much. We are still human. The world is still the same. And although we deceive ourselves into thinking there are new things under the sun, truly there's nothing new under the sun. Jessica and I just went to Caneyville. I don't think there'd been a rock moved in 4 years. I mean, things just don't change, especially in the country. You know, in the city, we think things change more often, but how long does it take to get anything done? Nothing changes. So what does man gain in all the toil at which he toils under the sun? Well, there's nothing new. So then he proceeds to say, because I understood that my labor does not gain anything, I can work my whole life and really not make a dent on this world. I can live my whole life working and not make one little difference. Where then am I going to search? I want to make one note before we go on. The word vanity is a word that is misunderstood in the book of Ecclesiastes. Normally, the word vanity, we try to interpret it as being meaninglessness. It's not meaninglessness. The word vanity is more of this idea there is no gain of anything. It is vain. There is no gain. That word is actually Hebel, very similar to the word for Abel. You remember with me the story of Abel? Abel was a righteous man who gave to God a good sacrifice. What gain did he get by his good sacrifice? He got killed by his brother. What gain was there for Abel? None. What gain is there in this life at which we work? None. Too often I've heard the book of Ecclesiastes interpreted as before you're a Christian, your work doesn't have meaning. After you're a Christian, your work has meaning. That is a complete misunderstanding of the book of Ecclesiastes. It doesn't matter whether you're a believer, an unbeliever, a Christian, an atheist. It don't matter a bit. Our labor gains nothing. Now, righteousness will come into play in a minute. But in the question, what do we gain in our toil? Doesn't matter. None. We're like a little 10-year-old out there in a field with a pair of scissors trying to get a big, huge field cut down. None. So, verse 12, because there's no gain, I, the preacher, have been king over Israel and Jerusalem. And I applied my heart to seek and to search out by wisdom all that is done under heaven. It is an unhappy business that God has given to the children of man to be busy with. I have seen everything under the sun, and behold, all is vanity and a striving after the wind. Verse 16, I said in my heart, I have acquired great wisdom, surpassing all who were over Jerusalem before me. And my heart has had great experience of wisdom and knowledge. And I applied my heart to know wisdom and to know madness and folly. I perceive that this also is a striving after the wind. For in much wisdom is much vexation, and he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. So not only is there vanity in our toil, there is vexation in the search. We're vexed by it. There's nothing that happens. We're confounded by it. Whenever we come to understand, really, you take the grand scheme of life, we're not going to put a little dent on this earth. That's the reality of life. You take Solomon, the great king. Everything that Solomon built is demolished. The great kingdom that he once ruled over with is now gone. The people that he ruled are dead. Solomon accomplished in this life far more in his toil than I ever will. But it's vanity. There's no gain. So then, because there's no gain in what he did, he sought wisdom. What's the meaning of life? Why are we here? What's the purpose of suffering? What's going on in all this? He sought wisdom. He sought the wisest of his age, and he recognized its madness and its vexation. And we understand this, right? Try to understand the injustices of this world. Try to understand the wickedness that goes on. Why do bad things happen to good people and good things happen to bad people? Why are there injustices and cruelties in this life that no one can even begin to understand? You try to start answering those questions, it leads to vexation. It leads to madness because we can't understand. I mean, we are just the little 10-year-old down in our little part of the field when there's this whole other part of the field we can't even see. So here's the question. If there is vanity in toil and there is vexation in the search, what then are we to do? Well, Solomon reemphasizes again, there's more vanity. 2:1. I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure. Enjoy yourself. But this also is vanity. So here's what Solomon does. His work, his toil gains him nothing. His search for wisdom leads to madness. So he goes into escapism. He's going to try out pleasure. He's going to try out the pleasure of this world. Then maybe that will give him gain. Verse 2. I said of laughter, it is mad. And of pleasure, what use is it? I searched with my heart how to cheer my body with wine. My heart still guiding me with wisdom. And how to lay hold on folly till I might see what good for the children of man to do under heaven during the few days of their life. I made great works. I built houses and planted vineyards. I made for myself gardens and planted them of all kinds of fruit trees. I made for myself pools of which to water the forest of growing trees. I bought male and female slaves and had slaves who were born in my house. I had great possessions of herds and flocks, more than any who had been before me in Jerusalem. I gathered for myself silver and gold, treasures of kings and provinces. I got singers, both men and women, many concubines and delights of the Son of Man. Essentially, what does Solomon have? He has a midlife crisis and buys himself a convertible. His toil has gained him nothing. His search for wisdom is leading to madness. So he's going to try out pleasure. What does it gain him? Verse 9, I became great and surpassed all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also, my wisdom remained with me. Whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I kept my heart from no pleasure, for my heart found pleasure in all my toil. And this was my reward for all my toil. But then, I considered all that my hands had done. And the toil I had expended in doing it, behold, all was vanity and a striving after the wind. And there was nothing to be gained under the sun. Yeah, his palace gave him pleasure for a little while. His gardens gave him pleasure for a little while. His music gave him pleasure for a little while. Wine gave him pleasure for a little while. Sex gave him pleasure for a little while. But at the end, there's no gain in it. There's no gain. It's fleeting memories. It's fleeting time. There's no gain in it at all. Well, finally, Solomon's going to bring this section to a great end and recognize vanity of vanities. Verse 18. I hated all my toil at which I toil under the sun, seeing that I must leave it to the man who will come after me. And who knows whether he will be wise or a fool? Yet he will be master of all of which I toiled and used my wisdom under the sun. This also is vanity. Solomon worked his whole life to build up a kingdom. What happened to that kingdom? His son Rehoboam, a fool, came. Jeroboam came, another fool. They took it, they divided the kingdom, and it was split forevermore. He worked his whole life for a great military, for a great kingdom, for great wealth, a great economy, for greatness in every way. In the days of David and the days of Solomon, they were the most fruitful that Israel ever saw. But then one generation later, his foolish son ruins it all. What gain is there? If we work our whole lives and we have to leave everything that we've built to others, what gain is there? If there's no gain for me in this life, there's no gain in pleasure in this life, there's no gain in anything, what then is there? Verse 24. There is nothing better for a person that he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil. This is from the hand of God. For apart from him, who can eat or have enjoyment? For the one who pleases God, God has given wisdom and knowledge and joy, but to the sinner he's given the business of gathering and collecting only to give to the one who pleases God. This also is vanity and striving after the wind. The book of Ecclesiastes has four sections. This is the first one. All four have the same argument. Let's then answer our question. What does man gain at his toil? What does man gain in all the toil at which he toils under the sun? Well, chapter 1, verse 9, going back to chapter 1, verse 9. What has been is what will be, and what has been done is what will be, and there is nothing new under the sun. Nothing new under the sun. Going back to the field example, we can cut the grass, God planted the grass. We may think that we may come up with something novel. We may think we come up with something new. Yeah, God gave it in the first place. Look at the gain of technology. Where did the materials come from? Didn't they come from God? The ingenuity behind it, where did it come from? Didn't it come from God? Is technology really giving us that much more advancement? Have humans really advanced that much? No, there's really nothing new under the sun. We may deceive ourselves into thinking that the toil of our hands produces everlasting change on this earth. But brethren, our lot is there's nothing new under the sun. Going a little bit later to chapter 2, verse 11, he likewise answers, I considered all that my hands had done and the toil I had expended in doing it. And behold, all is vanity and striving after the wind. And there is nothing to be gained under the sun. There's nothing. Finally, in chapter 2, verse 23, all his days are full of sorrow. His works are vexation. Even in the night, his heart does not rest. This also is vanity. Doesn't Ecclesiastes paint a great view of life? The book of Ecclesiastes has generally been viewed as a very negative view of life. I'm about to argue it doesn't. The book of Ecclesiastes actually argues for the best life that we could ever live. It argues for a joyful, happy existence. But if we want to find joy in life, if we want to find purpose in this realm, we want to find meaning to the work of our hands, we need to begin with the recognition the work of our hands is toiling and it produces no gain. It's vanity for us to think that the work of our hands is going to leave a lasting impact. I know that's difficult for us Americans to think, who judge ourselves by our industriousness, who judge ourselves by our work, who judge ourselves by all the labor at which we do. But brethren, there's nothing to be gained. Within my own career before I was a preacher, whenever I was at Purdue, there had been one professor who had died 5 years before I got there. He was the best of the best. In every way, he was the most accomplished of academics you could ever imagine. If there had been an award in the discipline of communication, he had gotten it. He was the top dog. Everybody recognized he was the best. 5 years later, what impact had he made? We have one journal every year that publishes the best findings. Every year he was living, his work was in there. 5 years later, he wasn't even cited. Half the department didn't even know what theory he had made. The other half didn't even know his name. 5 years after he died. As I looked at my life and I looked at myself putting 60 hours of work in every week to my academic labor, what gain was I really going to make? You know, I could deceive myself into thinking I was going to find gain in my work. But really, there's no gain. Now, let me make one quick note. The book of Ecclesiastes never says don't toil. We have to toil. We are made to toil. We're made to work. If a man not work, nor let him eat. But we deceive ourselves into thinking that true gain, true meaning, true purpose, true gain is ever found in the work of our hands. So here's my question. If we gain nothing in toil, where then do we find substance and purpose? How do we find purpose in this life? Well, going back, I would recommend, the answer is quite paradoxical. We have to find enjoyment. Oh, this doesn't make sense. Chapter 2, verse 24. There is nothing better for a person than he should eat and drink and find enjoyment in his toil. What? You're telling us hardworking Americans, there's nothing better that we should find enjoyment? It doesn't make sense. Verse 25. This I saw is from the hand of God. For apart from him, who can eat or have enjoyment? I'm going to stop there. His answer, we do not find gain in the work of our hands. We only find toil in the work that we do. We only find vanity in the toiling under the sun. So if we want to find substance, we need to find enjoyment? What, Solomon? You've lost your marbles. Well, I would recommend this is a profound answer. Remember, Solomon was a man who, if it could be done, he did it. If there was an aspect of wisdom that you could go after, he understood it. The wisest of men who'd ever lived. His conclusion, to find gain in life, you need to find enjoyment. Well, I want to go to a couple other verses in the book of Ecclesiastes to understand why this is such a profound answer. Number one, I would recommend this. God is in control. Chapter 3, verse 14. I perceived that whatever God does endures forever. Nothing can be added to it or taken away from it. God has done it so that people fear before him. Again, let's note. Whatever God does endures forever. Let's go back to our analogy. God planted the grass. We may cut the grass. We may water the grass. We may even shape the grass. But all we're doing is we're either taking a little bucket of water and we're pouring on it or we're cutting it. God planted the grass. It's still grass. God has planted it from his eternal hands. We may make a little bit of an impact, but God has planted it. Nothing can be added to it or taken away from it. God has done it so that people may fear before him. That which is already has been, and that which is to be already has been, and God seeks what has been driven away. God's in control. This is the basic message of Ecclesiastes. God is in control. We fool ourselves into thinking that we are in control of our lives. God is in control. Why is it that unknowable calamities strike us in life? Why is it good things happen to bad people, bad things happen to good people? Why is it that there is no gain in our toil under the sun? It's not for us to know, it's for God to know. God is in control. We're the little 10-year-old down with a pair of scissors thinking that we're in control of that field when God's up in heaven looking down, seeing the whole field, recognizing he planted it, he gives the increase, he will give the takeaway, and ultimately one day he'll burn it away. God is the one whose works endures forever. He is in control. And while we like to get control of our lives, right, that's a very American thing to do, right? We want control over everything. We like to micromanage ourselves. We like to be in control of every little detail. That's vanity and that's vexation. God's in control. So because God is in control, what then do we need to do? We need to recognize God's gift. Go with me over to chapter 5, verse 18. Behold, what I have seen to be good and fitting is to eat and drink and find enjoyment in all the toil at which he toils under the sun, the few days of his life that God has given him, for this is his lot. I don't think Solomon's being sarcastic here in the least bit. These are the most serious words he writes. Verse 19. Everyone also to whom God has given wealth and possessions and power to enjoy them and to accept his lot and rejoice in his toil, this is the gift of God. For he will not much remember the days of his life because God keeps him occupied with joy in his heart. Here's the conclusion. The work of our hands produces toil, but God's gifts give gain. Let me give an analogy. Growing up, my family had what we called a Hawaii account. If you remember one of those very retro 90s crayon banks, it was a big crayon, however you want to say it, that we would keep in our hallway. Anytime we had extra change, extra money, we just always put it in there. This went on for, I think, about 5 years. So, you know, if Grandma had given me a little bit of money for helping out with, you know, raking leaves or something, we'd put it in the Hawaii account. If I'd gotten a little bit of extra money for doing something, we'd put it in the Hawaii account. One day the dream was to go to Hawaii. My parents had been, when I was 1989, and always been their dream to go back. So we had a Hawaii account. I think after 5 years of us putting money in there, what seemed like, you know, every week, we went to count it. I think there was $50 in there. But boy, didn't it feel like we were toiling. We were toiling. We thought we were making a difference. We thought we were working and we thought we were filling it up. And we thought when we rolled that puppy out, we'd be able to buy plane tickets for the whole state of Kentucky to go to Hawaii. $50. But then you know what would happen Christmas morning? Y'all know I love Christmas. We'd wake up. My sister and I'd go to the tree. And we'd find present after present after present. You know why those presents were there? Not because I'd toiled for them, but because my loving parents had gifted them to me. Brethren, I would recommend, I think too often we try to find meaning in the crown rather than finding it in the Christmas present. God has given his gifts. God has given his eternal gifts. God has given us the gifts of this life to enjoy them. We should eat and drink and be merry because those are the gifts of God. We should enjoy our time on life because God has gifted it to us. We should enjoy the field because God has gifted it to us. But too often we deceive ourselves into thinking that we will find meaning in the work of our hands. There was one week at Purdue that I had just had a busy, busy, busy week. I think I'd had like 5 tests. I had to grade like 100 papers. I had been up till 3 every night, woken up at like 7 that morning. I mean, I had had a long, long week. I had toiled and toiled and toiled and toiled and toiled. And then Saturday morning, I take it back, it was Friday night they came. Friday night, my parents came up and surprised us with my grandparents joined us. So then Saturday morning, we all sat outside on our porch. We drank coffee, I think, for about 3 hours and just talked and caught up, had a great time. What did I gain that week? Really, what did I gain? I got a paycheck, and that's why I did it. I don't remember one paper I graded. I'm sure a student does not remember one comment that I gave. I don't remember the grade I got on one of my tests. I don't remember any of that. It was vanity. It was vanity. There was no gain in it. But you know what? God has blessed me with 4 loving grandparents and 2 loving parents and a wonderful wife. And God has gifted us with that. We sat outside on that porch and we enjoyed God's gifts. I had never earned it. I had never gained it. I had never worked for it. But my Father in heaven had gifted me with that. And we sat outside and we enjoyed it. Are we going to find meaning and purpose in life by the work of our hands? Or are we going to find purpose and meaning and gain in this life from the gift of our Heavenly Father. So very quickly, then, what should we do? Well, two very practical recommendations I would make. The first is we need to fear God, Ecclesiastes 12:13. The end of the matter. All has been heard. Fear God and keep His commandments, for this is the whole duty of man. God will bring every deed into judgment with every secret thing, whether good or evil. My toiling may not lead to impact on this life, but God's going to judge how I toiled. God's going to judge how I behaved. God's going to judge how I worked, because God's in control. When we stop and fully recognize, and those of y'all who know me well know it's hard for a perfectionist to give over control. But when I understand I'm not in control of this life, but my Father's in control, that's the only point in life I'm going to find meaning and purpose. I control maybe one little blade of grass. My God planted the field. I may put 25 cents into the little piggy bank, the little crayon bank. God's going to give me a whole gifts under the tree. God's in control. We need to fear Him. But likewise, I would recommend this. We need to enjoy life. Chapter 9, verse 7. Go eat your bread with joy and drink your wine with a merry heart, for God has already approved what you do. Let your garments be always white. Let not oil be lacking on your head. Enjoy life with the wife whom you love all the days of your vain life that has been given you under the sun, because that is your portion in life and in your toil at which you toil under the sun. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all your might. For there is no work or thought or knowledge or wisdom in Sheol to which you're going. We need to enjoy life. That's God's gift. If I enjoy sitting out in the patio drinking coffee with my grandparents, enjoy life. It's God's gift. Enjoy His gift. So let's answer our question. Where do we find gain? Well, we only find gain in God's gifts as the work of our hand only produces toil. That's the message of Ecclesiastes. Get out your songbooks, please. As I said 15 minutes ago, the book of Ecclesiastes is typically viewed as a very gloomy look of life. I used to take that view until I actually read the book. And I recognize the book of Ecclesiastes, it doesn't have a gloomy view of life. It has a realistic view of the work of our hands. It is a man who finally comes to grips with the fact that he has worked for years and years and years and years and years and years. He has searched and searched and searched and searched and searched, and searched for nothing. It was vanity and vexation. But then upon recognizing that realization, recognizing the reality of life, then he came to a greater wisdom. He came to a fuller understanding of this life. God is in control. I'm not. I need to enjoy His gifts. So I need to fear Him. That's the message of Ecclesiastes very simply. When it comes to salvation, I would likewise recommend, I think we often deceive ourselves into thinking we can fill up the piggy bank and God's just going to give us salvation. Oh, no, 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 no. Ephesians chapter 2, verse 8. For by grace you have been saved through faith. Verse 9, it is not your own doing, it is the gift of God. Salvation is the greatest of God's gifts that He has ever blessed us with. We may think that we may go through this life filling up our piggy bank with good works. Yeah, no, those aren't going to save us. Being a good person isn't what's going to get us to heaven. Salvation is not found in being a good person. It's found in the gifts of God. It's found in His grace. That's where God has blessed us, through Jesus Christ. A gift that we could never earn, a gift we could never merit, a gift we could never deserve. Our God who's in control, our sovereign God who sits on the throne, He recognized our pitiful state of sin, so He sent His Son as a gift, and through the gift of His blood, we can then find salvation. What then do we need to do? We need to have faith. And if Romans chapter 5 verse 1 tells us, now faith has granted you access to God's grace. Whenever we have faith and we obey our God, whenever we have a believing, convicted faith that obeys our God, that listens to Him, that does what He says, a true, convicted, godly faith, we will fear God and keep His commandments. And as we have faith in Him, as we obey His commandments, as we're baptized, and as we are put into Jesus Christ, it doesn't earn us salvation, but it certainly gives us access to His salvation. Again, we can't earn it. It's the gift of our God, but we certainly can access it. That is the lot of man. And praise be to our God that He's gracious. Glory be to His good name that He is giving and gracious and good. Because He has not just given us a stocking with an orange in it. He's filled up the Christmas tree with every gift that you could ever imagine found in Jesus Christ. That's how good our God is. If you want to access His salvation, you want to come to Him, give your life over to Him through faith and obey Him and give your life over to Jesus Christ, come forward now while we stand and while we sing.